This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's considered a literary classic, and it's even been called the American Bible. Later in the show, we'll hear about Moby Dick and an upcoming arts fest to celebrate the Herman Melville novel. First up this afternoon, the home mortgage crisis and Great Recession created a shift in consumer spending behavior and attitudes. Joining us to take a look at just how dramatic that shift was, along with current consumer spending habits and the effect they have on future economic growth, are Dr. LaVon Henry, Vice President and Senior Regional Officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, and Dr. Jack Kleinhens, Chief Economist for the National Retail Federation. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And LaVon and Jack, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for this opportunity, Mark.
Delighted to be with you.
LaVon, the U.S. has gone through 13 recessions since the Great Depression ended in 1933. Now, what was different about this last one? What qualified it to be the Great Recession?
The Great Recession got its name very rightly because it was longer and deeper than any downturn we've had since the period of the Depression. Normally, a recession lasts for approximately 6 months. This lasted for 18, my friend. Okay, we saw pullback in almost every sector of the economy. And the most important sector, the topic of today's conversation, the consumer. Consumers account for 70% of the U.S. economy. And when we don't shop, when we don't go out there on the weekends, when we don't eat out, we all suffer. And that's what we saw.
Jack, what made this one so different from your perspective?
I think the major issue was we just lost so many jobs in a very quick period of time. So spending power by those in the marketplace, and LaVon mentioned 70% of our economic activity is generated by the consumer. So when you have, you know, unemployment running up, you know, from 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 to 9. percent, you lose the ability for the economy to move forward because the consumer and their spending is so important. So that is no doubt the major factor. And then secondarily, it was the loss of credit and the use of credit that in many ways enhances our ability to spend. And it all collapsed along with some other parts of the economy. I'm sure LaVon wants to talk about that in a minute or two.
Right. And can I just add something to what Jack's saying, because he's so dead on everything he just said. We pulled back a lot on credit, okay? And that is substantial in the consumer sector because a good percentage of our consumption was financed through credit. And now what we see is that the consumer is changing significantly how they pay for goods and services. Real quick statistic. Anytime you've got economists on, you know you're going to see numbers.
I like numbers.
Hey, great, because there will be a test at the end. I want your callers to know that, okay? If you look at growth in revolving debt prior to the recession, it's growing like 8-10% a year. Credit cards, HELOCs, okay? Now, 0 to 1% or thereabouts. We're not taking out the plastic like we used to. Mm-hmm. And part of that is we're not consuming like we used to.
Well, what about student loan debt, though, LaVon? Hasn't that skyrocketed, or is that a misperception?
It's not a misperception, but it also isn't an apples-to-apples comparison to where we were before. Student loan debt right now is approximately, and please don't hold me to this, but it's approximately $1.323 trillion, okay? The next biggest category are auto loans, somewhere in the $900 billion range. Now, they said $1.3 trillion. I'm sorry if I said billion. Now, keep in mind, though, student loan debt, which is installment debt, is really an investment in human capital. Now, that's not saying that every student loan debt that was taken out is being applied toward greater education, this investment in human capital. But nonetheless, it is adding in mass to the bulk of human capital and higher income earnings in the future. But on the flip side, and there's always two sides to any economic argument, right? There is an issue of, does it hurt consumption in the near term by young people not being able to spend as much as they could before, but having to pay that student loan? Mm-hmm. And there's an issue there. Jack, do you have any ideas on that?
Well, no, I think you're dead on. I mean, there's no doubt in my view that student loan is loans are an investment in the future, and that is some of some concern going forward. But I think as we decompose the causes of the Great Recession, you mentioned credit and consumer cutting back. Well, what was happening in housing was really how we got into this whole Great Recession, and in my view, going forward is how we're going to ultimately get back onto long-term track, because back to credit, we were using the value of our homes, and we were taking out home equity loans, and we were borrowing against the value of the home that we thought was going to increase, and we were spending that money right away. And then what happened throughout the situation is people, as they lost jobs, couldn't make their mortgage payments. They were overextended. And in some cases, there were mortgages that were extended that should never have been extended to individuals. And there was a lot of improprieties that went on. So, you know, from the standpoint of how the recession transpired and how we get a recovery and full expansion, we suffered greatly in terms of our ability to spend vis-a-vis credit and also even our wealth that we had tied up in our homes.
Jack, that's interesting. You're talking about the home values. During the recession, wasn't a case that a lot of people were finding that they owed more on their mortgage than their home was worth. So in real estate terms, they were underwater. That was a big part of the situation. Have we seen any improvements in that?
Oh, yes. I think, you know, nationally, home prices are up 4% to 5% in the last couple of years. But we need to also recognize that's a national number. Local housing is a very local economic activity. So in some markets, they've regained home values. There are still markets that have not regained the value of their home prices, you know, in certain parts of the United States. While we've seen improvement, there are some, you know, localities that may have a long, long way to go to recoup where they had left off back in late 2008.
Yeah. With respect to the housing market, as Jack said, yes, we did have significant negative equity in many markets in the country, and that causes people to, A, sometimes foreclose, and also to cut their consumption. But there is also something else that is truly unique to that, the burst of the housing bubble and our slow recovery in the residential real estate market since that time. And what it is, and this, in my humble opinion, primarily affects younger persons in the market who are looking for more so affordable homes, is that they were the first generation since at least the Great Depression who actually saw a national housing recession. Now, we've seen regional recessions in housing throughout the years, but never nationally. Because remember, we all believe housing prices don't go down, right?
Right.
We always believe.
We've always been taught that this is a very reliable investment.
That's a reliable thing.
Yes.
Put your money in your house, right? Well, we saw housing prices go down. Children now in college saw their houses lost to foreclosure. They saw their fathers and mothers put out. So now we're looking to that same demographic, that same age demographic, to say, well, I want to jump into that too. But they're coming in slower. They're going into the housing market slower. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because they're coming in more knowledgeable. And anytime you have a knowledgeable consumer, a knowledgeable buyer, it's good for the stability of the market over the long term. Housing will come back. We got to live somewhere. Housing will come back. It will just take time to get back to where we see it as really moving this economy forward.
LaVon, based on what I'm hearing from you, you talk about young people a lot. So one of the groups that's been most affected, where there's been a most lasting impact on from the Great Recession, has been on that millennial generation. Is that right?
Yes, it definitely has. So it definitely has been. And we've already spoken about two of the areas that the millennials, and Jack can probably speak better to this than I, who have seen their consumption impacted because of the slow growth in the economy and the change in the housing market. Go back to those student loans. Paying that big bill every month for those student loans makes it less likely that you're going to go buy that second and third chai latte or whatever. I like McDonald's. I'm a simple guy. Okay.
They have good coffee, too.
They have good coffee, too. Okay. But the long story short is it makes that young person more value-focused with how they spend their money. In fact, not just young people. And, Jack, tell me if I'm wrong here. You're the expert. We have become a much more value-focused economy with respect to our consumption patterns. Have you seen that in your research, Jack?
Oh, absolutely. And, in fact, recently, it's kind of a conundrum. Why isn't there more spending? Because the ability to spend is there. And in the last few months, since sort of maybe late 2014, as the consumer has benefited from some increases in income, we haven't seen a commensurate uptick in consumer spending as much as you would expect given the amount of income. We have a lot more saving going on by consumers.
This is
and
true.
So there is sort of a gap that has been created. We don't know whether it's a sustained one because of, you know, uncertainty, and is a saving due possibly because of gains that people are getting from lower gas prices and prices in general, or is this something that we're going to see because people are concerned about their future and maybe they need and realize they have to save more for their retirement?
Yeah, my question would be, is this the new frugality? Are we entering into a period of people being more frugal?
Well, let's say it's always hard to project the future, especially in any economic discussion. But there are some things in our society, evolving our society, that would make one think that, yes, we are, possibly for the medium term. One is that we have a greater percentage of our population approaching retirement. And when you have people approaching retirement, they finally get serious about saving for retirement, okay? And those are dis-saving until after retirement. So we have a greater percentage of our population saving for retirement. We also have, at the same time, slow growth in consumption being used for, let's put it this way, slow growth in income, but a greater percentage being used to deleverage, getting out of debt, okay? So the more monies it's going to get out of debt, implicitly saying having higher rates of savings. I love to throw these numbers around because this really does tell you something about, we're back in the numbers, my friend. Right now, we're saving on average in this country about 4.5%. And that might not sound like a lot, but I can tell you this.
It's been as high as 8%
it
sometimes.
It has been as high as 8% immediately following the recession. But now we've stabilized around 4.5%. Prior to the recession, it was 2%. So we've more than doubled where we were. But you got to tell you this. Now, if you go back to what might be considered a normal time, well, let's put it this way. We all know our grandparents told us they saved what when they were walking 15 miles to school each way uphill. Oh, we saved what, about 100, 155%, right? No, Granny's lying. She saved about 10%. Okay,
which is pretty good.
Which is still pretty good. Mid-1980s, we were saving about 10%. And we saw credit grow and grow and grow and savings decline and decline and decline. And that's when we hit that financial wall, 2007, at the low part of our savings. And now, times are reversing.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Did the mortgage crisis and the Great Recession affect your spending and economic attitudes? My guests this afternoon are Dr. LaVon Henry, Vice President and Senior Regional Officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, and Dr. Jack Kleinhens, Chief Economist for the National Retail Federation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jack, some luxury segment products and services seem to be immune to downturns. Was that true during this last recession, or did all sectors take a hit?
Oh, all sectors took a hit. There is no doubt. I mean, When spending collapses, it collapsed. I mean, when it collapsed, it really collapsed across the board. Now, some sectors, certainly certain types of non-discretionary goods that you need for everyday expenditures, or you know, for consumption, didn't do so badly. But it, certainly, we saw it in discretionary items, and it included, you know, clothing and furniture and you know, anything that we really didn't need on a regular basis. And remember, you know, all those people who were unemployed, you know, they were in many ways receiving income supplements, unemployment benefits, and they needed to make those dollars stretch. They really didn't have the opportunity to spend more on non-discretionary things. So it really did. Now, when you brought up luxury goods, we saw after the fact that luxury goods started to pick up a little bit more in certain months and certain years, maybe a couple, 3 years ago. And remember, part of the trouble I have in terms of giving a complete answer is that when we look at retail sales, we have retail sales for individuals that are here domestically, but also includes anybody internationally. So there was some sales that were being propped up by international consumers, but you know, that's another conversation in itself.
There's one thing that Jack was probably getting ready to get to, is when Jack was speaking of the consumer put on hold a lot of discretionary expenditure, we can use a very good example of that. Cars, okay? That car is, on average, the second biggest purchase the mm-hmm. house is going to make. Well, if we look at the average age of vehicles on the road prior to the recession, it was about 9 years or so, okay? Give me about half a year either way, about 9 years or so. Now, it's more than 11 years, approaching 12 years. We held as long as possible. Jack?
Well, and remember, one of the motivations in public policy back, what is it, about 4 or 5 years ago, was to try to jumpstart the economy, was to get people to get rid of their used cars.
The cash for clunkers.
And get them into newer cars. And, you know, that just wasn't enough. That was like taking an aspirin when you have, you know, brain surgery going on.
This is true. And I'll tell you this personally, Mark. I've held mine for 18 years, my friend. It fell apart on the road about 6 months ago. I got some rope. I tied it together. It's still going.
Bungee cords.
It's bungee
cords.
Duct tape. You got it.
Your best friends.
Duct tape's the best thing ever invented.
Let's talk with Mario in Lebanon. Good afternoon. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Yes, gentlemen. My question was with regards to food inflation, and exactly how accurately is it being tracked in light of the fact that a lot of manufacturers are literally resizing a lot of their packaging. And as I see it when I go shopping a lot, then so I'm wondering how that factors into the government's numbers with regards to inflation.
Okay, thank you for the question, Mario.
Jack, did you want to take that or me?
Well, I make a couple comments. Mm-hmm. First of all, in a very low inflation and very low inflation environment that we've been seeing, it's very difficult for producers to pass on price increases, and maybe in some cases justify price increases. We had a couple of droughts a few years ago that had a significant impact on agricultural production, and that's part of just the way agriculture is. But so the resizing, you know, I can only speculate, may reflect the fact that manufacturers have had a challenge in passing, and this is true across the board. I mean, I think you can say whether it's in retail or in manufacturing, and in many services, not all services, that you know, there hasn't been an ability to capture some increased prices. You might think that's the consumer might think, well, that's a bad idea, but you know, actually, you can't get paid more. You know, if we can't charge more in some cases, there's a kind of a delicate balance. So I think it's a relatively accurate index, and what you know, as you probably know, is that the Consumer Price Index that's reported out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics does provide what they call a headline, which includes energy and food, and then core, and the core really has been a lot more stable than the headline because energy and food has been fairly erratic over time in terms of what we pay for the use of those products.
Let's talk with Bethany in Clifton. Good afternoon, Bethany.
Hi, yes, this is Stephanie.
Oh, Stephanie, sorry.
I just wanted to bring up, that's okay. I just wanted to bring up that a lot of people can't go out to dinner anymore or buy like they're used to because if they have foreclosed on their home or missed payments, their credit has been hit by that. And so, you know, in the old days, you know, you'd go out to dinner on a Friday night with your credit card, and that's probably not possible anymore. Another thing, we're trying to get a deed in lieu for our home, and the process is daunting. It's taken 5 months so far, and we're still no closer to getting the deed in lieu for our home. I know one thing, the dream of owning a home in adulthood is no longer part of our family's conversation because we just, between property taxes and just the cost of a home, we're running now, and I couldn't be happier.
I'll tell you, Stephanie, I can definitely understand what you're saying because with respect to, let's say, the first part of your statement, affordability to just consume at the levels we were before, which were being pretty much financed through credit, isn't there anymore. And really, yes, a lot of people's credit have been impacted because of prior foreclosures or difficulties in payment over time. And I know this may sound like an easy panacea, but it's truly not. Time does heal all wounds, even that credit score wound. And what you actually see is it takes about a 2 to a 3 year period for credit scores to once payments are begun to be made on time and other accounts other than that foreclosure to really start reversing and heading back up. So it's just a process over time. But in terms of your second, affordability in the housing market is still a significant issue. Now, affordability in housing is still above. It's still stronger than it was prior to the recession, but it has been heading down. Prices have been going up. Although we are in a flat interest rate environment, prices have been going up, and that hurts affordability, especially in a low income growth environment. So what you're saying, I have no doubt. I have no doubt it's correct, but time does heal all economic wounds.
Let's talk with Jim in Cincinnati. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is related to the housing market, and I wanted to see if you had any suggestions or advice or, you know, what you can say about a hypothetical. Let's say you wanted to sell your home, but what's unique about the housing market is that the sale price of a house is based off the sale price of other properties in the area. And let's say you have an area, a property or two in your area that were foreclosed on, and the property value is in the tank. How do you resolve that situation? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jim. And we've only got about 30 seconds, so if we give Jim a quick answer on that, if that's even possible. Thanks, Jim.
It's exceptionally difficult what you're trying to do because it's proven that when you have foreclosed properties in the area, housing prices in the attached area do go down. The best that you can do, at least I know of, is try to differentiate your home from the locale by making sure its upkeep is strong. It looks different from the rest of the block to the extent you can make that possible, and by marketing it as a superior home for your neighborhood. Beyond that, sometimes we have collateral damage from our neighbors, and that's the case.
Well, LaVon and Jack, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed the afternoon with you.
Dr. LaVon Henry is Vice President and Senior Regional Officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, and Dr. Jack Kleinhens, Chief Economist for the National Retail Federation. Coming up, a preview of the Moby Dick Arts Fest. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.